Hello, hello. This is the Julian Hope Podcast, and today I'm going to be interviewing my dear friend Rory Bray, who is a fellow fitness and wellness expert, teacher, and instructor at our home away from home, Sweat and Tonic. We are going to talk about dietetics and how it influences the culture of fitness and wellness, which is a big part of almost everyone's lives, at least in North America. And I am going to be asking some pretty simple but also deep questions, as you know I love. So without further ado, this is the interview with Rory Bray. ASMR style. Not joking. Joking, we'll do that another time. We're here to have a serious, silly...
Serious? It's gonna get serious.
Serious and silly, or, I don't know, casual with some moments of clarity,
reflection.
Just reflection, a little bit of everything, how we are.
Yeah.
We're both, like, chill mood right now.
We're in a very chill mood.
So,
but it's not chill in here because we're jammed like
warm.
Sardines into a little recording booth.
It's a great booth, though.
It's a great
booth. So intimate, though.
Good energy.
Yeah.
Good energy.
Maybe for the listeners, Rory, you can introduce yourself and share with us maybe a little bit of your background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have worked in fitness, teaching like primarily yoga and Pilates, but also like doing personal training, and I teach ride now. And that's how I met Julian, is through Sweat and Tonic, which is our home base. And my background, I guess, is more so in classical ballet. I went to the National Ballet School when I was younger and then danced professionally for about 10 years. And from that, kind of fell in love with just movement in general. When I stopped dancing, I felt really lost, needed something that was going to connect me back to self. Mm. Movement always does that. So fell in love with yoga, Pilates, all of that. And then through being kind of integrated in the fitness industry, like started reflecting a lot on like some of the other, you know, baggage that comes along with that.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, I don't want to call it baggage.
Interests, yeah.
Can be baggagey. It was a little baggagey for me at the beginning, but like the nutrition and food piece kind of came out of that, I guess, being surrounded by, you know, very specific ideations around food, both in classical ballet and in fitness.
Wow, yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, kind of wild. And then I became really interested in nutrition and dietetics, and so I just finished my master's degree this summer.
Whispering it. Master's degree. Amazing.
Because I don't believe it. And also, yeah, I'm exhausted from it. But yeah, here we are.
Well, jumping right into that, I'm so curious as to like learning your relationship with food as you were like in dance and then shifting out of dance. And then now in fitness, and then now being a master's in dietetics, how has your relationship to food or what you consume changed over these years?
Mm-hmm. I think as a kid, my relationship to food was like fantastic. Often when we talk about intuitive eating, there's this sort of like concept or phrase that's always thrown out about like finding your like childlike relationship to food.
Oh,
and that like hits differently for different people, because I don't think everyone has like a very peaceful relationship with food as a kid, depending on your family and just like, you know, like food insecurity and just other pressures, societal pressures. But for a lot of people, myself included, it was like a very sort of like easy, free. And, you know, even when I was in like classical dance, even like as a teenager or like in my early 20s, I was really protected by a lot of thin privilege. I mean, everybody's body sort of naturally gravitates towards a certain shape. And so I, you know, had very delayed puberty for sure because I was dancing so much. But because I was quite thin, like I was very protected by that. So while I was always surrounded by, you know, people who were having challenging relationships with food or like had very interesting ideations around food, I like went to a boarding school where, like, you know, I was surrounded by eating disorders at all times. I was pretty protected from that. When it started to hit me more so was when I became an adult, my body started changing. And more so when I got into fitness, because nutrition is something that's like kind of pushed under the rug in dance a lot of the time, at least it was at that time, in the early 2000s. Whereas now I think it might be a little bit different. And in fitness, it was like so like top of mind and just like, I don't know, just kind of like went hand in hand with fitness and yoga. But there was this virtuosity about it. It was like all about tying morality to food, especially in the yoga community. So it was like, you know, is this food virtuous? Is it good? Are you being clean versus bad? It was kind of like this idea that you should like do yoga and like poop pure cucumbers.
That and, smelled like roses and exactly. Sage at the same time.
Yes, totally, totally. And then like, you know, you achieve this sort of like moral high ground that way. Or like you're like pure, clean. And so that's sort of like when my relationship with food was rocked the most. And I think even when I first started studying nutrition, it was more from that place. It was more like, okay, like how do I perfect, quote unquote, like my diet? How do I help other people? And then somewhere along the way, I found Health at Every Size, intuitive eating, and just sort of this like anti-diet culture messaging that just like hit and really resonated. And so my interest in food and nutrition at the beginning is very different than what it is now. Yeah.
Wow. That's such a journey. Well, is there like a common denominator belief system that you've carried from when you were young till now, whether it's belief or an ideal? Is there something that you've always stuck with? A couple of your top ideas or rules, or you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I don't know, like I don't really have a lot of food rules. Like I think that, you know, one time I really did, like I just got back from, you know, like traveling a little bit, and I remember the first time that I went to Italy when I was in my early 20s and I went to Germany, I didn't eat anything because I was, you know, I had all these rules about good food, bad food. I was like, you know, trying to be vegan at the time and doing all these things. So like I went to Italy and didn't eat any cheese or like meat, and I like didn't want to drink, and I just missed out on so much. And then when I went back this summer and I had that experience, like I just think at the end of the day, when it comes to food, it's like this is your one life. Yes. And so it's one way to, you know, drink it in, or it's just, yeah.
Experience,
yeah, culture. All of the things. Exactly. Experience culture, experience like social connection. Mm-hmm. So many of our like, you know, big moments happen around food, like yes. Birthday parties. You like sit around a cake with everyone you love. Mm-hmm. New Year's, you're like popping the champagne. Even just like intimate dinners with friends, like conversations that last into the night. Like it all surrounds food.
Yes.
And so you miss out on so many little nuggets when you're constantly ideating, worrying, carrying this mental burden of like, I shouldn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. There's this rigidity there that prevents you from really either expressing yourself or feeling the expression of life. Wow. People, you commonly say food as, or and fill in that blank, and it could be food as medicine, food as fuel. We as fitness teachers and people who are always moving, we need food. And sometimes I use food as release and satiation, food as community through family. And lately, I've been using food as fuel, and I've stripped away the necessity to make it always super tasty because my priority right now is to just be on my feet, coach, and be, you know, very nimble and agile with time. And I don't know, it changes for me from stage to stage. Different priorities come in. Let's say I'm training for an ultra marathon or, or Ironman triathlon. Food is fuel, and there's a level of performance that you can achieve from how you work with food.
Yeah.
And understand your macronutrients, micronutrients, and all that. So have you changed the way that you see food from when you were performing in dance to how you are using it now as fuel?
Yeah, I think so because I pay a lot more attention to what I'm eating now. I think like, you know, when I was dancing, it was like as little as possible would be great. You know what I mean? Like it was like more about restriction.
So like
Whereas
as
like,
little as possible to yield the maximum performance, or not
yeah, it's
even.
not even really like kind of that mindset. It's just like it's more an aesthetically
Right?
motivated thing as opposed to like, oh, I'm gonna
Like a
like
function.
be able to jump higher, turn faster.
Oh,
It's more
interesting.
like, you know, like what do I look like? Is it
Okay.
perfect? Like people who gravitate towards classical ballet tend to be like of a perfectionist mindset, and I definitely fall into that. So, you know, it like really plays into that because you're striving for perfection. It's not attainable, but you are striving for it. Whereas now I feel like even hearing you say that like for you food is fuel, like I think for me food is experience, but that can also like overlap with what you're saying. So for me, like it could be the food itself that's the experience. It could be the like having dinner with a friend over candlelight and like eating the most delicious thing, or it can be this is facilitating an experience for me. So
Yes.
your ultra marathon or whatever it is, like you're eating to facilitate this like other experience that you're going to have, and the way that you eat is going to really inform how that experience shakes out for you. You know? So it's like a conduit to an experience and it's an experience in itself.
Right, I love that. Yeah,
Yeah.
totally. Yeah, for sure. If I can choose foods that will help fuel my performance, so really being in tune with performance nutrition and then having that undertone of enjoyment, it's hard not to as a foodie. And that restriction level hasn't been felt yet, so I'm definitely finding a really good balance. But I can hear that there are some people who go that route and they don't strike a healthy balance. So how would you say when people talk about moderate in everything in moderation and whatnot, is that a circumstantial thing? Does moderation generalize itself, or can it flex? Like, how would you
I
talk about
think
that?
like I don't really kind of get behind this idea of everything in moderation just 'cause I think like the idea of moderation is like you still need to like moderate and restrict in some way. Like that's like what that word is saying as opposed to like you know, intuitive eating is not for everyone. If someone is like really in a restrictive cycle, like that those intuitive cues have been lost and so like you can't rely on them and there's different tools that can be used in that case, something more acute, but you know, if you're able to kind of get back to this intuitive place with food, like you're not really moderating or you're self-monitoring. Like oftentimes when people first start intuitive eating, you're allowed to eat like without restriction, anything at any time and any amount. And so, you know, that leads to a lot of like caloric surplus at first because your body and mind do not trust that like there will not be, you know, this like pullback or this moderation at some point. Where, and then eventually it kind of regulates because you're like, well, I don't need to eat this whole pizza because I can have pizza tomorrow and every day this week. So I will have like a one piece, two pieces. So I feel like, I don't know, like the everything in moderation thing, I think still really plays into diet culture and like you need to moderate, have only one cookie, split this piece of cake with somebody else. Like you could have a piece of cake, you could have two pieces of cake. Someone said something to me recently where we were talking about being pregnant, and she was like, I really want to be pregnant because I can eat whatever I want without
Oh,
moderation.
interesting.
And we were at a birthday party, and they brought out cake, and she was like, see, if I was pregnant, I could have as much cake as I want. And I was like, you can have as much cake as you want. Like, there's nothing stopping you.
How did that person
There was like,
respond?
she was like, no, but I could have like more cake. And I'm like, if you want to have more cake, you should
You can
have
still have,
more
yeah.
cake. Nothing bad will happen. I
Right.
promise. Like truly not just like eating a salad one time, you're not going to look different in the mirror the next day. Eating two pieces of cake, you're not going to look different. You know what I mean? And our self-perception about like, you know, our like days where we feel like we're killing it in the mirror and days where we're not are literally based on, you know, our own ideations, our own self-perceptions.
Perceptions,
Yeah, like
yes.
the number on the scale is not changing.
It's so interesting how dietetics is, and psychology and sociology, like they all interconnect so profoundly.
Yes.
One is informing the other and vice versa. Going into intuitive eating as a, what would you say, like, is that a methodology? Is it a practice?
Yeah, like a paradigm, maybe a way of thinking.
Okay.
Yeah.
How would you share maybe like the top three, or are there steps to it? Are there some guidelines?
Yeah, that would be a full podcast. But essentially it's about, yeah, it's kind of like what we've already talked about in like a very general way, about like sort of allowing yourself to eat unconditionally.
Okay. So that's,
and
like,
finding there's like an element of gentle nutrition within that, for sure. That's like one of the basic principles of intuitive eating is gentle nutrition, but it's the last one that comes in. So when you first start intuitive eating, it's, there's like a no holds barred kind of approach to how you eat. And it's all about reconnecting to your hunger cues. Mm. And also identifying like what type of hunger cue it is. It's not just like we're hungry or we're not hungry. If you're hungry, there's probably a lot of reasons why you could be hungry. It could be like actual physiological hunger, like a stomach hunger, you could call it. It could be like a mind hunger. Maybe it's 10 p.m. You're bored. You're watching TV. Mm-hmm. You just want something to occupy your mind. It could be a heart hunger, like food is incredibly...
feeling lonely or something.
Yeah.
You want to connect with someone.
Exactly. And food is very comforting. And maybe you're going through like a tough moment, and food can be a comfort. I feel like, again, it's kind of like we demonize that, this idea of like eating your feelings. Like really, like food is so, so comforting. And it's another tool that can help us, you
with
know,
our biochemistry.
Yeah, exactly. And it
right
can help
away.
Us like regulate, right? Mm-hmm. So immediately when you eat something, parasympathetic nervous system turns on, rest and digest, like let's get into it. So yeah.
Balancing your blood sugar levels.
Yeah.
Could be as simple as that for our insulin balance and response.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Because our sugar goes through our brain. We need that to stabilize.
Yeah. Yeah.
Physically, we need it to energize ourselves, to get us up from a, you know, maybe a sedentary mood or whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So it's not about like, you know, like ignoring your hunger cues or like only acknowledging physiological hunger cues or stomach hunger. I think it's like about like diving into like those cues when they're happening, and then seeing like where it's coming from, and then just like acknowledging that, letting yourself like eat and take care of yourself in the way that you need in that moment, and then being able to move on from it. I think that when we're not eating intuitively, or just like when we're kind of in this like diet culture mindset, even when we do eat the piece of cake, the pizza, whatever it is, you're ideating on it still. So if you don't eat it, you can't stop thinking about it, right? And then when you do eat it, you can't stop thinking about the guilt. It's like the mental burden that comes with it.
Oh, I see.
It's like a paradigm that kind of helps release that mental burden so that you can then like leave that behind and move on with the rest of your day and engage in things. Diet culture is like, it steals our time, our money, our thoughts, right? Like we're constantly thinking about it.
When you say diet culture, this is toxic diet culture?
I think all diet culture is toxic.
So what does that mean, diet culture? Just the idea of like diet.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way of limiting yourself to a fixed
pattern of eating.
Pattern of eating.
That's not based on situation, culture, environment, and, you know, like your own, you know, needs and cues.
It's like these,
which is always in flux. It doesn't fit into a pattern.
Right. It's like these preset constructs, perhaps in career, for example, or even in backgrounds, like in Asian upbringing, it's very common for parents to say, my kid is successful if they become a doctor, lawyer, engineer. This is a construct of success that we strive to attain, yet we don't step back and out of this and critically think about it and challenge it and say, no, success can be celebrated and explored in so many other ways beyond being a doctor, lawyer, engineer.
Totally.
So you're saying that the diet culture is the same. To be successful with your food, you have to eat this amount of food and this amount of nutrition in this kind of way, in this structure.
Again, it attaches like an immorality to eating.
Yes.
When like really there doesn't need to be that. Yeah.
Boundaries and these cagey sensations around it. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. How does food now? Oh,
there we me just keep talking.
Back in.
Okay.
Micronutrients, vitamins, minerals.
Yeah. So like even like just like, you know, terminology that we've been using really casually, like a lot of people don't know what that is. And, you know, understandably, because we don't get any education in it at all. So, you know, I often like ask clients and patients to like if we're working, you know, let's say we're working on carbohydrates or something. I just say that because I did a rotation in a diabetes outpatient center at the end of my degree. And, you know, a lot of people don't know like really what a carbohydrate is even. Like they, everyone knows it's like bread and that kind of thing.
Like
but
the simple carbohydrates versus complex.
Yeah, exactly. Like even just things like this that, you know, would be helpful for all of us to know.
Yeah.
We just get no education in it. And, yeah.
So then maybe the gift of education is spending some time learning about nutrition 101 so that when you go to a dietitian or anyone for help, that you come in with some information, some knowledge.
They can also help you, you know, like your dietitian can also be your nutrition 101 person.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Just like having a personal trainer
yes.
who can help you with your physical fitness and well-being.
Yeah.
You can have someone that can help you with your food and nutrition and hydration.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, as you can hear,
there's a fire alarm. It's the second one of the day, though, so it's
probably just a little test.
Yeah, for sure.
They want to jump in on our podcast.
We should make screaming noises so they think something bad is happening.
Ah! No, we gotta go! We're in this booth!
We're locked in the booth!
Anyways, thank you so much, Rory, for chatting about all things food and nutrition.
Thank you.
I always wanted to ask you about these questions, and I find that getting more in tune with my relationship with food, but not for myself, but to speak to others about it, because I get a lot of questions and I'm also curious as to learn where does the world of I guess like what's there's like macronutrients, micronutrients, and then maybe exploratory foods or substances like plant medicines and all that jazz, that
probiotics
like these are the things that what would you categorize them as? Like things that optimize us or?
Yeah. Cool. I like that word. Yeah. Optimize is a good word for sure. Yeah.
Instead of being a victim of, let's say, poor diet culture and food, a lack of food education, how about beyond that, going from a place of wellness and taking it to the next level, right? How do we enhance?
How
do we enhance our performance with keeping to the ground rules and the foundational principles of dietetics?
That's
what I'm also curious about exploring. So maybe we can do a part two about that stuff.
We'll do a part two, and also to clarify, like dietetics is so broad. So like this is the paradigm from which like I see nutrition and dietetics. But, you know, there's a lot of different colors and flavors within dietetics. So going to a dietitian, you're always going to get like this great sort of like person-centered care. But this health at every size, intuitive eating kind of model is very much rooted in like sort of one facet of dietetics. Whereas, you know, some people do still practice dietetics from like more of a weight normative perspective, which is, you know, based on the assumption that like weight loss is always sort of a positive thing where, you know, like weight loss becomes sort of like the goal as opposed to a potential outcome of like health promoting behaviors.
Right. It's just like how in fitness, a lot of the conversations that I've had with Dustin, who's my co-host on the S&T show, another fellow fitness professional.
A gem.
He just left. We talk more about able-bodied humans, and the things that we talk about are more centered towards them. So just being able to understand the range or the continuum is really helpful when we talk about this kind of stuff. I think that's a really good acknowledgement in conversations moving forward. But like that's a whole world that I want to learn more about. Even tactics like fasting and and yeah, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting work.
It's super interesting. Yeah.
Is it a touchy-feely kind of place, or is it like really solid? Is it an area of focus that you use?
It totally depends on the thing. Like you mentioned fasting. I'm actually just not really a fan of fasting, like beyond fasting. Like for like religious reasons. Like obviously, right. like food is like so rooted in cultural and like social norms. So there's, you know, so much room for play within that. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, a lot of intermittent fasting is sort of touted as, you know, people feel as though they're achieving success with that if they achieve weight loss. Right. So again, it's really like a weight loss like metric.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like I don't think people are really intermittent fasting for other reasons.
No.
Yeah.
Just purely aesthetics, probably.
Yeah.
This is the best way to get a super lean 8-pack.
Right. And for a lot of people, you know, that's one, not your body's happiest set point. Mm-hmm. And two, it's sort of become a bit of like a socially acceptable way to
restrict
and not eat. You know, I think like 10 years ago, if someone was like, no, I don't eat all day in order to lose weight, you would be like, well, that's a disordered pattern of eating. Mm. Whereas now to call it quote unquote intermittent fasting, you know, it like makes it socially digestible.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there's like, you know, huge stigma. If someone says they're intermittent fasting, you know, they're like boosted up on a pedestal as like this picture of health. If someone says I have disordered eating and I can't eat today, there's a huge stigma that goes with that suddenly, right? So it's literally the same practice looked at in two very different ways.
And then there's people who add to that, well, intermittent fasting encourages the release of growth hormone and so on and so forth. And there's a lot of research that goes into backing up those claims and the benefits of.
There's a medium amount of research. It's very correlation.
Which is so awesome to hear from you, because this is the source. I mean, you're fresh from your master's, so you know this information.
Yeah.
So it's
the growth hormone piece from what I know is minimal.
Mm.
I don't think, and also most people are not using that as a metric of why they're intermittent fasting. Again, it's like weight loss,
right?
They're not saying, I'm doing this to boost my growth hormone.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're doing it for
other reasons. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So many different angles at this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can tell why it would take 6 years to get to a place of, I guess, level-headedness around the topic. But even yourself and even those who've been doing this study for so long, you know, either things change, there's always a new fad diet, a new approach that comes out that you have to, okay, let's explain, let's talk about this, let's use some research to balance it out.
But also, I'm not immune, so I'm still a human being who exists in this world that you know, like, really values one type of body and one type of, you know, like, very westernized way of eating.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even as someone with a certain amount of privilege in that sense, like, do I wake up and a lot of days, like, am I not happy with my body? Mm-hmm. Do I feel like I need to engage in these practices? All the time.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. I am a human woman living in this world.
Right.
But I think it's, you know, it's having the tools to then be able to, like, deal and cope and talk yourself off the ledge.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that like I or anyone is immune, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, you know how to like to roll with the punches a little bit, you know, the more information you have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So to end this off, Rory, what's for dinner tonight?
Ooh, that's a fun question. I don't know. I'm going over to a friend's, so probably order sushi.
Okay. I'm thinking about having a poke bowl right now.
A poke bowl. Yours is like the undone sushi.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like it that way. I like that when you go to a poke bowl place, you can pick and choose what you want and then assemble it together. There's something about that shift in how food is now provided.
Yes.
Which makes it really curated and personalized.
Yeah, food as identity.
Right. Like, and also by feeling, you can choose these like ingredients based on, again, the circumstance in which you need to perform. For me, I need to move.
Mm-hmm.
I like that freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And food choice is really important. So
when
there's that availability, it's the best.
Yeah.
The best. Yeah.
So good.
Cool.
Mm,
all right.
I'm hungry.
Yay. All right. We're ending it off. Thank you so much for listening, everyone.
Maybe we should take some bites into the mic.
Nom, nom, nom. Thank you, Rory.
Thanks so much, Jim.
All right. Peace, love, happiness.